This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the month of May. Do you sell in May go away? Perhaps. And I do a lot of chart reading each and every day. Probably about 800 different charts I look at. And I'm seeing a lot of them pointing lower. I can open with it is a bull market, and market, I believe, ultimately works its way higher before the next major bear market comes in. But ebb and flow, and from a seasonal perspective, a bit of a layup to have some cash. Market looks heavy, and sell and may go away has a lot of validity to it. We look at the numbers and the statistics. Basically, from May to October, market tends to rise about 1%. And again, recall, markets tend to move up about 8 to 10 a year. So the bulk of the gains take place from the fall to the spring. You buy when it snows, you sell when it goes. It's not that easy. Bit of guidepost. Election year affects all of that. But I will say, congratulations, work, save, invest. I'm seeing more people going to work. That's a good thing. Again, the restaurants in Toronto, they must have had a tough go getting through COVID and even coming back to work. You get to see a bit of a slow build, and you know, downtown in the core, a lot less restaurants in the food court. A lot of places did shut down. Many reopened. New faces, new beginnings, shall I say. But, you know, good old greasy spoon, diner food, early morning to get yourself started. Why not? People used to say in Toronto, if you went and saw the Horseshoe or went to Lee's Palace and had a late night, you'd head over to Sneaky D's for the, what do they call it? The cholesterol special, I think. Got rid of hangovers apparently real well. Jeff Parisi, he's a founder and CEO of Sunnyside Grill, not Sunset Grill. Who was first pal with the sun in the name?
I'm not exactly clear, but they might have been first in their first location down on Queen Street that was there.
The one of the beaches? The one of the beaches?
In the beaches, yeah.
Yes, I drove by that not too long ago and I saw that place. Yeah. How many do they have?
I'm not quite sure on the amount of locations they have, to tell you the truth.
And how many do you have, Jeff?
We have currently 12 locations now. We got 4 locations under contract, and I opened my first location in downtown Oakville about 20 years ago with my mom and my dad and my grandmother peeling potatoes in the basement, if you can believe it.
I can believe it. I was in Munich, Germany, and that is a very busy town, historic town, and lots to see. Tourists from around the world congregate around the clock tower. I think it's called a Glockenspiel. It's really, really cool. And there is a Five Guys Burger and Fries. And boy, what a display of potatoes in that store. Right. So I think it's the most successful Five Guys. Is it Five Guys and Fries on that? Whatever. Most successful one out there. And it was just packed. And it was all about the potato. Yeah, no, it's an interesting business. A friend of mine used to own a restaurant, but not a fine dining restaurant, but a higher end restaurant. And you know, if there's a restaurant around the corner that wasn't that great, he'd call it a ham and egger. But ham and eggers are good. It's just you got to do a lot of volume to make some money, don't you, Jeff?
Yeah, you certainly do.
And so, how's business? Tell me, what's the mood of the customer base that you're dealing with? Obviously, inflation's out there. Prices have risen significantly. The tipping. Oh, Jack wants to be all over that tipping discussion with you, my good friend.
Yeah.
I'm going to support you on the tipping on this one here. But just part of the conversation we're going to have. But yeah, what are you picking up? Boots on the ground as a guy that, you know, serves the general public that has to, you know, go to work every day.
You know, the main theme of the day, I think, is inflationary costs. And they've hit us hard in kind of all aspects of the restaurant business. You're just, you know, faced with margin compression. The one thing and the one benefit, I guess, about breakfast restaurants and us at Sunnyside Grill is our average ticket price is just a lot less than going to fast casual or high-end restaurants.
Big time.
So you can come into one of our shops and have a full-service experience for, say, under $20.
100%. No, it's funny. This whole tipping thing has frustrated a lot of Torontonians, but I was taught years ago, Life's Little Instruction Book. It's a fabulous book. If you ever haven't read that book, Life's Little Instruction Book. It's as good as, well, Reminiscence of a Stock Operator, my favorite stock book. But in it, it said, over-tip the breakfast waitress. you know, so, you know, that 20% thing that's been going on driving us crazy. But yeah, that's if you're dealing with a $100 meal. But when you're dealing with an $18 ticket price, go 25, pay the person. You know, they work just as hard as that fine dining person. In fact, probably harder. So there I'm okay with that 20% default. But that's been frustrating a lot of people. A lot of people are just so tired of the price of restaurants. And but by the way, Jeff, pork is cheap. Used to obviously, you know, a pork-based diet when it comes to breakfast food. So that obviously helps the cause. Potatoes haven't gone crazy in price, have they?
No, but I mean, in general, through COVID especially, all of our price, you know, some of the prices doubled on bacon and sausage and proteins and, and even eggs and dairy. This, you know, because of whatnot, carbon taxes and cost of freight and transportation and lack of labor, just like everybody else. So those costs were very tough through COVID. And, you know, we managed to pull through by just getting very skinny on labor and our franchisees work in the shops, and we made it through. It has leveled out a little bit now, but there's still a lot of margin compression in the business.
You know, it's funny because conceptually, it can be a very cool business. And I do think about diners, sort of like a Mel's Diner. There's an old diner down by the old docks. It was a classic venue. You probably know it, Jeff, and it actually got into the Toronto media attention. It was an independent building in and around the docks area by the actually not too far from where we are, Jack, as a matter of fact. If you just go a little bit east of the Core Studios, there was that freestanding on the corner building, and it was basically a diner, and it would service that whole industry around the docks. Is it still there, Jeff? You know the place I'm talking about, I think.
Was that on the corner?
Yes.
Yes, I do know it. I don't think so.
Because I ate in that place once, and I said, what a cool experience. It sort of reminded me of the diner at, right by the Massey Hall, the old Jazz Lounge. You know the jazz restaurant upstairs on the main floor? There was a great diner. Oh, what is it called?
Right.
You know
was it Franz?
Yes. No, not Franz. No, it was close to Franz. Just south of Ryerson. It was a jazz club. Anyways, but it's a cool business. Are you finding it? Can you make a living at it? Because the restaurant business is a grind.
It's a grind. Yeah.
No doubt about it. Can you make a buck, you know, selling ham and eggs?
Yes, you can. And when franchisees come and, you know, and meet with me and sit in my chair, I tell them that, you know, with the size of our restaurants, there's no real manager per se. The franchisees work. And my most successful shops, the husband cooks and the wife serves, and maybe the kids come in and do dishes and serve and help and work. And, you know, when you're all pitching in, it can be a very profitable business. And as far as the hospitality business goes, our operation are one shift, 7 to 3. So as long as you're an early bird.
You operate, so the restaurant's open 7 to 3 and then you shut down at 3 p.m.?
That's correct.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
And it's an all-day breakfast, Wolf.
It's an all-day breakfast.
Yeah, we have an all-day breakfast. We have a lunch offering with, you know, the regular burgers and salads and yogurts and fruits and et cetera, et cetera. Some of our restaurants have liquor licenses. Some of them don't. But the beauty is that you can be in the restaurant business. Our margins are you know, constantly held because we constantly do our food costing. And you can be home for dinner with your family. So what you're saying is 100% true. The grind of the restaurant business is tough on you, but at least if you're home and you have the evening, the dinner with your family and evenings to yourself, it makes a big difference in, you know what they call restaurant burnout.
So, but again, it's a 7 day week operation.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's again, it's tough, and staffing in Toronto must be an absolute nightmare.
It's gotten a little bit better than it was coming out of COVID. It was just nearly impossible to find, especially people working in the back of the house, you know, cooks as opposed to the tips of the servers up front. It's gotten a little bit better. But again, our places are small enough that a small team makes the difference.
When I think small makes sense. You're better off to be smaller rather than larger, aren't you?
100% now with the amount of takeout and the amount of online aggregator use that we get. I mean, we just get a ton of, you know, the regular online aggregator delivery sales. So
what percentage of business ends up in a box on the back of a bicycle? My sinusitis wouldn't do well. I don't know.
You know, it's funny because you think that, you know, breakfast doesn't travel that well, but we kick it out. We kick out a lot of just regular bacon and eggs and pancakes and burgers and sandwiches.
What percent of sales is going that way?
I would say it depends on the store, but there could be about 10% to 20% of sales that are just going out the door with drivers.
No, that's smart. But you got to adapt, Jack?
Absolutely.
No, you got to be able to adapt in life and in business. And so people can order online now. I take it and show up, and if we're waiting for them, they can obviously use some of the delivery services. Or if they want to be served and sit down nice and comfortable, I guess that's obviously the way I like to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think the beauty is you could come and have a full service experience, which, you know, most people want for a really reasonable price. We've noticed going through last December that we got a lot more reservations for parties and company parties and group gatherings because I think of one, the cost, the price point, the fact that it's full service, and I think people are drinking less, and they're not looking for that, you know, environment or that option as much as they were, say, 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Really? Like a Christmas party at the Sunnyside Grill? Little, I don't know, poached egg, little hollandaise sauce, maybe and some smoked salmon, and let's celebrate. Why not? Jeff Parisi, he's the founder and CEO of Sunnyside Grill. Support him. Good cause. It's good business by the sounds of it. And, you're creating employment and helping the entrepreneurial spirit thrive. That's a good thing, Jeff. I do wish you great success. Thanks for spending some time with us. Boots on the ground. It matters. I wish you continued success. It's Joe's Hi-Fi Radio. Each and every Saturday, Jack and I bring it to you here on 640 in Toronto. Please, any questions, any thoughts, drop us a line, wolfgangklein.com, thewolfonbaystreet.com. We'll get back to you. We're here for you, and you want a review, free review? Why not? Call us. That's what we're here for. Quick commercial break. Get back to the show right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
All aboard!
Let's go. I just think of The Office every time I hear that track. Eh? That scene when they're running around the office doing a little team building. So funny. Good old Ozzy. Crazy Train, my friends, chosen because, well, it is May. And they say you sell in May, go away. And as I indicated earlier, I look at about 700 charts a day. And most of them are pointing lower. And I think equally important to remember is the 52-week high and the 52-week low on almost all stocks has a range that you can drive a transport truck through. Even some of the most defensive stocks have a 25% range from high to low. And markets had one heck of a move from October of last year, and more importantly, the October low of the previous year that set the stage for the new bull market to begin, which has now had about a 50% run off the bottom. And here we are in May. Sandy McIntyre has about, 100% more experience than the Wolf on Bay Street. I've been on the street for about 23 years. Sandy, a few more than that. He's retired, but you really can't take the bay out of the man. I'm going to work on that line, but for now, we're going to stick with that. James McIntyre, thank you, and welcome back, my good friend, a.k.a. Sandy.
Well, I started downtown in August of 1975, so that's a couple of generations of experience within walking distance of the corner of King and Bay, so... Yeah, I would say I'm a Bay Street Dezion.
Well, you see, it's amazing because with experience comes wisdom. And, you know, I remember when I joined Bay Street, my manager said, Wolf, you won't know, please bleep this out, until you've seen a few bear markets. Two or three market cycles, and then you'll have learned something. And the Beatles used to speak about, you know, you have to log 10,000 hours. I'm going to say not enough. I'm going to say you probably got to log, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. At least I'm a slow learner, so about what it took me to begin to learn something. But boy, I remain very naive, James is saying, this is incredible. But tell me something. Based on the run that we've had and what you're seeing right here, right now, Sandy, in terms of the overall market backdrop, how are you feeling about the summer months in front of us?
It's sort of bipolar. I agree with you that this market has had a long run and that it is a very concentrated market due to the current preference for passive investing. So what you are in effect having is consistent passive flows into the same stocks. Getting off the treadmill with 100% of your capital is making too big a decision. Having some cash that's built up or tactically taken through culling the herd is typically a wise thing to do as we go into the third quarter. The three worst months of the year are October, February, and May. You never get a major market low in May. You always get major market lows in either October or late February, early March. Remember, it was March 6th. During the financial crisis, that was the ultimate low. The other thing,
It's funny, Sandy, because I joined Bay Street 2001. I was a customer to Bay Street throughout the 90s, and I remember March 2000. There was the high of the NASDAQ at around, was it 5,200, I'm guessing. I think I'm probably right, too. NASDAQ 5,000, and that was in 2000. It took 20 years to best that number. Today, the NASDAQ is, I don't know, what number is the NASDAQ? Is it 11,000, Sandy, Jack?
It's higher than that.
I don't have it in my head.
Yeah, nor do I. It's weird, eh? But NASDAQ 5,000 I had in my head and went to 5,200. So interesting you say March. I always thought September was equally probable. Obviously, October, we have the historic low of 87, but September, October tend to be tough months. In fact, the worst month of the year is September, bar none. But in terms of cash right now, Sandy, again, work with us. This is a bit of a money workshop, I like to call the show, where Jack and I do some of our work live in front of the audience, you the listener, with people smarter than us, Sandy McIntyre. Sandy, so in my growth strategy, I'm sitting 30% cash. In my U.S. quant, I just keep peeling profits and having trouble to find stuff to buy. So I'm sitting about 48% in my U.S. quant, which is up, by the way, 15% year to date. So I'm protecting that. And you know what I'm protecting it with? 5% risk-free T-bill. And that's the interesting gist of it. I have a really good alternative that has no risk to it. But I want to again, dovetail over into something you said earlier, and it's an important point. You spoke about passive flows of money, which is people who are buying ETFs monthly, weekly, automatically, without a lot of thinking, long-term investors, you know, RSP season, et cetera, et cetera. And they push stuff in the direction that the flow is happening. And Ben, Jack, in our office, I'm not sure what Ben's last name is. Do you know his last name yet?
We're going to have to find that
We'll find out. Ben
runs. We're going to bring him on the show.
We will. Ben runs our SMA. He used to manage about $2 billion, Sandy. He's about, I'm going to guesstimate 45, but he's very, very bright. And he said, you know, some of the swings we're seeing on Bay Street in the commodity stocks, both up and down, it seems to be very indiscriminate selling and movement. And he said it's probably from the result of passive flows, aka ETF in, ETF out. And it just basically indiscriminately moves names more aggressively than otherwise would take place. Sandy, over to you on that statement.
The causal part is the flows into retirement products, RRSPs, IRAs in the States, pension funds, are a consistent positive flow that runs at about 6% annually, compounded over decades.
Mm-hmm.
GDP runs at around 3% nominal, 1.5 to 2 real. And we are growing the pool of capital that invests in our community faster than we are growing the capital required within the community, which reprices assets.
What about outflows? Again, I thought baby boomers were supposed to cash in their chips and start taking money out of the market so they could, well, travel the world.
The outflows are typically at a slower rate than the growth of the assets within the retirement product. So the retirement assets are still in pretty very positive net accumulation.
Uh-huh.
So we're going out on Mother's Day with my mother, who turns 102 in May.
God bless you. You got DNA, my friend. You got risk, longevity risk. Wow. 102. Muzzle top, buddy.
Her RIF is still $260,000.
That's good money management. Gee, way to go, son. Mom must be proud of you. What's the withdrawal rate, Jack? When you're 102 and you have a $200,000, is it 20%?
It gets up to 20%.
What is it, Sandy?
25% a year.
She has to now take out 25 a year. Wow. Does she have a cottage? Is she going to be affected by the capital gains bump up? They actually may get rescinded, actually, I heard as well.
No, she doesn't.
She does not.
Back off one time. This
one right now.
Interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they do. But
it has to get a special vote for it to go through. It can't just be part of the government's budget. They have to actually get a vote on it now. I think they're pushing that aside. I don't care. I can't work with politics. It doesn't make me money. I want to make money right here, right now. As we got Sandy on.
I'd say the point that Sandy's making with these exchange traded funds and passive investment fund flows, all the stuff that we've been talking about. These people that are putting money there are price takers. They're not setting the price. They're just putting the money in. They just keep adding dollar cost averaging. They don't care what the price is. They keep adding. That is where the opportunity is.
But also on the outflow.
That is where the opportunity is.
Agreed. But Kevin was saying, I'm seeing these names often gap down across the space. So they'll sell coppers and oils at the same time. Every name gets hit. It's indiscriminate selling, just like
both
sides of the trade. Yeah,
and like I said, that's where the opportunity lies, especially for stock pickers. You mentioned our S&P 500 strategy, Wolf, up 16% this year. It's double what the S&P is. Now you're sitting waiting for what Warren Buffett would call a fat pitch, waiting for the market to present an opportunity.
Sandy, do you think we're going to get ourselves a fat pitch between now and say September, October? Tough call, obviously.
Short-term predictions are always a mug's game.
Amazing, isn't it? It's incredible.
You do have natural volatility in the market. I used to use a technical indicator that I called my oscillator. It effectively measured the distance between the spot market and various moving averages. I typically used the one-year moving average, the 90-day moving average, and 1 year, it's 252 days that I used, because that's the number of trading days in a year. What I found was when that spread got too wide, and that sort of up in the 12.5 to 15% above the one-year moving average, there was tendency for the selling to come in. People who understand mathematics understand that price momentum doesn't last forever, and it's time to start booking some profits when a market's extended, and you eventually see a rolling of it. When the market sharply sells off, selling is an art form. Buying is courage. And when
I like
the market,
that. That's good. That's good, Sandy.
When the market sharply sells off, specifically like it did during COVID in February, March of 2000, that down spike took you about 35% below the one-year moving average. But that's a massive move.
No doubt.
That's equivalent to October 1987. Yeah. It's not as bad as it was during the financial crisis. Every time you've had one of those down spikes that's more than 22.5%, 1 year out, you've made money, and you've made money big time.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I love that line, selling is art. So again, friends, if you're going to sell, do not do the opposite of what Sandy just spoke about. When the market's down 35%, do not be fearful and then panic. Do the opposite, which is have some courage. Either buy or hold. Too late. But these levels, you know, people are greedy. They want to keep making money. But, you know, pruning, book and profit, no complaints from me on that strategy. This is the place where you can sell if you want to sell. If you want to hold, that's fine. And I do think, you know, if you hold quality assets, I don't care what they are, you will make money in 5 to 10 years. But again, Sandy, the high low on names, it behooves me. And I want you to ponder, you know, what you can share with the audience, just about the randomness of stock prices in the short term. You take any 52-week action on any company, it's just remarkable. The delta between peak and trough each and every year. Again, our homes don't fluctuate that wildly in price. I don't think they do, but certainly the market does. That short-term call is just incredibly challenging. It's a total mug's game. Long-term, that's a different story. Let's take a break, get back to Sandy McIntyre. He's a retired strategist, spends a lot of his time in a philanthropic role with Lacte Foundation. He, of course, formerly was a strategist at CI Investments. And, well, he's worked on Bay Street since 1975, just after Watergate. Let's take a quick break. Get back to Sandy right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Yes, that record hit record stores. About the same time Sandy McIntyre hit Bay Street. I'm guessing 1975. I think about 250 million albums sold worldwide. Just so you know, Sandy, 250 million. The band pocketed probably between $2 to $3 per unit. Not bad, eh? $2 to $3 a unit, 250 million sold.
And Dave Gilmour still active.
And they're streaming, they get paid. Now, if I played that for 30 seconds, Chorus would have to pay them for the rights. So, we'll stretch it to 30 and let the band get paid. Interesting business. We're going to get Steve Kane back on the show, Jack. He emailed me a while ago. He's a really cool dude, an old record company executive, Sandy, that has the most amazing stories about the music industry and, technology and just people's media habits. It all ties together. And it is a business. It's a real business. And, well, this is a show about business, so we can invest in various businesses. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Sandy, speaking of investing in businesses, I don't know, about 20, 25 years ago, you'd know better than I. I think there were roughly 5,000 names that traded on the major exchanges in America. I think that's been cut down to about 3,500 names available to us. Less selection of investments, not more. Same thing with Canada. It's been hollowed out. Is there a scarcity of investment vehicles, hence the reason for some of these names trading at logically overvalued levels more often than not?
I would say that, yes, there is a shortage of quality assets. That's in real estate, that's in equities, and I would say in fixed income as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one needs to adjust your pricing mentality over time. I've always felt that companies that consistently compound their earnings at a rate that is higher than the rate of growth of nominal GDP are worth looking at as investments.
Like a 6 to 7% grower is what you're talking about, 6 to 10, something like that.
That's right. Where you make mistakes is when you value a 7% grower as if it's a 25% grower.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened back in 99, 2000 with Nortel.
So, Sandy, a company that can grow, is it top line or bottom line you're focused on? I know obviously both, but which one is more relevant to start the conversation?
To me, it was always the bottom line.
Bottom line. All right. So, yes, you got a 7 to 10% bottom line grower. What kind of a PE multiple would justify that?
That's dependent on your current interest rate.
Today's rate?
So if I can get on a 10-year bond 5%,
yeah,
my 7% grower is not a 30 multiple.
Nope.
It's not a 20 multiple. It's something like a 17 multiple.
That's a 17 multiple on that puppy. And again, most of those names today are probably trading closer to 20 to 25 multiple. You know, it's incredible. There's a lot like that. I go down all the sectors, Sandy. You know what's woken up is real estate, utilities, staples. They've woken up, I guess, from depressed levels, but semiconductors look lower to me. Banks look sideways. In Canada, sideways. U.S., they're getting some interest. U.S. insurers have had a great move. They continue to work. The industrials look toppy, slightly lower. I'm going to say the probability is they do push lower. Software, we spoke. Software looks, like I said, one heck of a move. It wants to correct. Energy's already had a move. I bought it at the last minute, and I topped energy, as I said I would. I always top oil. Gold's had the move. I don't know. I wouldn't buy it. Crypto's already rolled over. And there's an alternative of 5% for your money. That is, what's the word, Jack?
It's a risk-free option.
It's an alternative. There now is an alternative. There was no alternative. It was Tino, isn't it? That was
yes, Tino. Now there is a reasonable alternative. 5% is just fine for a lot of people.
I agree. Again, here we are in May. That current valuations with the 5% backdrop, Sandy, for the next 6 months, what do you think?
I would be cautious through to August, mm-hmm. And then start looking at market behavior late August into the middle of September. You typically, as you go into the third, go towards the end of the third quarter and into the start of the fourth quarter, you tend to have silly stuff happening on a global basis.
Yeah, Don Vila said you get a lot of analyst revisions to the downside come the fall. They come back to work, they think things aren't as good as we thought, so analysts come out with their pen and paper. Yes, boys and girls, I said pen and paper, and they re-rate their companies, usually to the downside. That puts a little bit further downward pressure. But then the earnings start to kick in early October, and people say, wait a minute, not as bad as we thought, and the new rally begins. It's not as easy as that, but, rough sketch for a playbook, there's a chance. Look, we're going to take a quick break, get back with Sandy McIntyre, and we're going to continue to milk him for his 48 years of wisdom. It's just an absolute delight to have Sandy McIntyre by our side on Hi-Fi Radio, the show about money, work, save, invest, repeat. And then when you're Sandy's age, you get to play, invest, and repeat. Hi-Fi Radio, 640 Toronto, coming up right after this.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
Well, April showers bring May flowers. Hey, the sun comes back. It does. Takes a few months. Long winters in Canada, I must say. And, we had a mild week and then 33 degrees, hot, hazy, and humid. Oh, yeah, just around the corner, I'm certain. Hi-Fi Radio, I am Wolfgang Klein, partner Jack Hartle by my side. And we're here to help you build wealth and here to help you enjoy your wealth. A lot of moving parts, a lot going on, taxation, planning, estate, legacy. Will I have enough? Do I have too much? Call us. That's where we help people do. Answer those very, very difficult questions and set out a plan for the long haul. I tell you, we have very, very happy clients. Really happy clients. You want to know why? Go to our website, wolfgangklein.com, thewolfonbaystreet.com. Performance matters. Style matters. Service matters. The clients matter. That's what it's all about. You, the listener, you, the client. And, this show is a show to help you get a better understanding of what Jack and I do each and every day. And, we rub shoulders with smart people like Sandy McIntyre, who's worked on Bay Street since 1975, and he's here to share his wisdom and knowledge with all of us. And it's a real pleasure to have him on the show again. Sandy, tell me something. The utility sector, staple sector, defensive side of things is waking up. Stay with me. Jack, you taught me one very important thing in hockey, and that, again, my son was a goalie when he played for Duffield Devils. And you said, Wolf, defense wins championships. And what I learned as a hockey coach was if you want to score, you got to take shots on net. I think both are true, right?
Universal truth, Wolf.
Universal truth. So my point with shots on net, is what I'm doing right now in this market, Sandy, is I'm just looking for ideas that look interesting. I'm putting a feeler out, a small line out, a small buy out. If it works, I'm adding to it. If it doesn't, I'm running and looking for the next idea. And right now, a lot of names I've taken off the table. I can't find a lot of redeployment ideas. I'm sitting in T-bills in a very defensive posture. What was your line towards defense, Sandy? You have a very smart line about the market and defense.
Well, first off, I wanted to say that the market is far more volatile than the economy as a whole.
Oh, no doubt.
A lot of the volatility in the market is as a result of constant views being expressed in media,
yep,
and people responding to them. Be very careful about who you take advice from, because you don't necessarily know what axe it got to grind.
Yep.
They got a bet against you and are going to take advantage of your behavior. Interesting that you were saying that real estate and utes are coming to life. A typical utility should trade in 15 to 17 range. It has the rate of growth of roughly 5 to 6%, and has a dividend yield between 5 and 7%. You know, sort of generic utility. If you're getting 6% compounding of your capital base plus a 6% dividend, the assumption that I would have is that you're getting a 12% return in a 5% world. And if you're getting that paying 17, 18 times earnings, that's a pretty good outcome. The market doesn't typically give you 12% consistently over multiple cycles. It gives you around 8-9%. So I could see people who are mathematically inclined, for the non-passive portion of portfolios, beginning to pick away at areas that offer some pretty interesting intrinsic value. Now, for those people who tend to get panicked by the noise on CNBC or Bloomberg TV, whenever you feel like you want to do something, go out into the real world and see if people's behavior has changed. Are people cutting their Bell 5 subscriptions? Are they getting rid of their natural gas that heats their home? Are they disconnecting from OPG, Ontario Power Generation? I don't think they're stopping heating. I think they're still going to Food Basics or Loblaws or Metro. I still see lineups at the LCBO. I must admit I probably go in there too frequently, but that's life. So when you start to get really worried, remember what we're investing in is the real world and various constant behaviors within the real world. And it changes over time. Yeah, streaming wasn't around 15 years ago, you had to go to Sunrise to get a new CD. I would point out that Dark Side of the Moon was number one in the six-pack CD player in my 1990s Volvo.
Remember those six-pack changers? That's a classic piece of hardware, pal. Did you have it on 8-track back in 75 in your Pinto?
I actually had a... My first car was a Karmann Ghia, which
Very cool. Very cool. That was Volkswagen made that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a Porsche wannabe. It was a very cool car. The motor was in the back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very
then
cool.
I had a Fix-It Again, Tony.
You had a what?
28 Sport. A Fiat. Fix-It Again, Tony.
When I was in Italy, they were doing a Pucci fashion show, not Gucci, Pucci. And the model was in a stretched convertible Fiat. It was like a pimp machine. It was so cool. It was red. It was stretched, about 27 feet long. I never saw such a thing, because Fiat was always known as a small, small car.
Yeah, I never had an 8-track, though. I had cassette.
Yeah, you had cassette, eh? Yeah, I never understood. And you remember they actually had a turntable that went in a car? Yeah, good luck on that product. I think it lasts about 3 weeks. But yeah, they tried. I mean, it was Bang & Olufsen or something to try to come up with that product. So, you know, it's incredible, Sandy. Morgan Stanley's research work, and we have a minute, but I want to share this with you. Morgan Stanley's research, they now, in their analyst recommendation, the very bottom of it, they show factors that move and affect the stock that they are rating. And more often than not, so they will say fundamental 25%, they will say sector 38% of the move, and then idiosyncratic always over 50%. The way I view that is sort of what you've been summarizing. You can't predict the short term. The media will take you in the wrong direction. All those factors create this idiosyncratic behavior that makes people love or hate a name. And I'm going to conclude with, you know, it's funny, a body in motion stays in motion. So the saying on Wall Street is, the market can remain, I guess, insolvent longer than you can remain solvent. In other words, things can go to the sky for no justification, just because idiosyncratic human psychology, and vice versa. Things just get so beat up. Again, Bell Canada, you mentioned 5G. Stocks making 52-week lows, came out with quarterly results. They weren't that good. They're actually investing in the 5G network. Stock continues to go lower. It's not going to zero, but I don't know. The market will take it to a level it wants to take it to. I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to respond to that little diatribe mine there, Sandy.
Well, funnily, when I moved houses in Oakville, I moved to the corner of Allen and Lakeshore in downtown Oakville. And when I called Bell up to move my 5 service, they told me I couldn't have it because it wasn't available in downtown Oakville. I got a knock on the door earlier this week. 5 has come to the neighborhood. Now that you mention it, I'll go take another look at Bell, because it's a deeply unpopular name.
9 yield on it. The funny thing is, it's not earning its dividend, Sandy, and I spoke to our analysts about it. I'm not sure what the dividend is. It's only earning 50% of the dividend, but their shareholder base would not be happy if they cut the dividend, so they're determined to hang on to the dividend until the 5G is built out. Then their CapEx will drop, and they should, once again in 26 or something like that, be able to earn that divvy again. But the whole sector is pointing lower, not higher. Jack actually just slid something across me. A name that we did buy this week, Sandy, was 3M, technically on the turn. But the day they cut the dividend, the stock went up, not down. So usually when they cut a dividend, the general belief is the stock's going to go lower. When it goes higher, that's bullish on a negative news item. That's actually super, super bullish. Sandy, unfortunately, we're out of time, pal. But I can't thank you enough. You're outstanding, and you're full of wisdom. And the audience and I thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. It's very, very helpful.
Okay. Well, have a wonderful sunny weekend.
Likewise. My friends, please, any questions, anything on your mind about money and about your financial future, you have a couple of friends named Wolf and Jack. Reach out to us. We'd love to speak to you. WolfgangKlein.com, the Wolf on BayStreet.com. Take a look at our performance tabs. You'll see how much money we have made for our clients, and we continue to do just that, build wealth. And you know something? The longer Jack and I stay on the ice, the better we get. All for you. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.